Welcome to Draft Deeper on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. Thank you so much for joining us on this lovely Monday morning. Thank you for making us one of your first podcast listens of the week. We certainly love coming at you on a Monday because we get to kind of talk about a little bit of what happened the prior week. We get to be the first voices on the podcast feed doing that. We also get to talk about a little bit of our writing, what we're diving deep into, hence the name Draft Deeper. I'm back. My name is Nathan Grubel. You obviously know me as the host of Draft Deeper, but maybe you don't because I've been gone for a little bit. I've been sick. I've been in and out moving into my new house. So I've been in and out a little bit, but I am the founder of the Draft Deeper podcast. And now that we're on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed, thank you so much for joining us here in this newer spot. We've been here for a few months, and joining me on tonight's podcast is not Stephen Gillespie. Stephen is dealing with some of the illness that I've been dealing with over the last few weeks. I know Maxwell Baumbach, who is with me tonight, has been dealing with the sickness a little bit. And thankfully, my longtime producer, Kevin Black, is still here with us tonight as well. So we have three of the four usual team. I feel like we're playing musical chairs, Maxwell, trying to get everybody on a podcast. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing as well as I can. I'm doing much better than I was earlier in the week. I still want to apologize to, like, the video feed people. Like, you're going to see me blowing my nose a little bit. But on the plus side, like, I think being sick mutes a little bit of the Chicago accent. So that's a good thing. I might sound a little less nasally for a change. So we'll take it. We'll take it.
We have
the good with the bad.
Look, we have mute buttons for a reason. So that's perfectly fine.
Exactly.
And Maxwell's looking clean shaven tonight. If you're watching
the
podcast, this man is looking sharp. He is ready for a bomb podcast episode. Are you ready to dive into what I think to be a few fun players, some top names, right? One intriguing name who we didn't expect to be in this conversation, but some top names. Are you excited for this episode?
I'm really excited. We're going to get to kind of focus in on a couple guys a little bit, and they're all really interesting players with, like, big ramifications. Like, everyone that we're going to talk about tonight is a very important piece of the 2023 draft, but they're still kind of, I think, out of sight, out of mind in some senses, between injury, just being a late riser in the process. Like, these are still guys that haven't been covered to death and haven't been talked about and are still under the radar, even though, like, these are first round names. So I'm really excited to go through this list.
So normally what we do here on Draft Deeper, in case you are relatively new coming in, you're 2023 listening to the podcast, normally we're covering what I write about on a weekly basis, which is my Morning Dunk column, in which I go over last week's events. I try and hit on the big storylines related to the NBA draft. I'll give you some stock updates. I'll give you some games to watch. We try and break out some of the main topics of that column. And then what Maxwell does for the prospect overview, we're obviously talking about what he's writing about as well. And then Stephen with his Weekend Warrior column, we try and combine all three of those recap columns into a neatly woven podcast show, which we're still technically doing that tonight. But because Maxwell and I have been in and out of the action, we haven't really gotten a chance to talk about what we wrote about last week. So that's really what we're going to be focusing on in this episode. If anyone's eager to hear me babble on about my Morning Dunk column coming out this week in podcast form, trust me, that's coming. You're going to hear a lot of me on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed this week. I pray to God that you do not get sick and tired of hearing my voice on this podcast feed. That's all I'll say about that. But like I said, we're going to rewind a little bit. So what I wrote about coming into the new year, I wanted to kick off 2023 with a bang. And I was kind of looking, Maxwell, at some of the names that we haven't really written about in detail. And there was a big one that jumped out to me, and it was Nick Smith Jr. So Nick Smith Jr., the Arkansas guard, 6'5" guard, he has been in and out this season, right? He started off the year with a preseason injury. Then he came back. He played five games. Really, the sample size that you and I would want to focus on is about three games worth.
Yeah.
And then he's out again. He's trying to recover a little bit from right knee soreness. I believe they're quote-unquote load managing that injury. The latest details we actually got today, the day that we're recording this on January 8th, Jeff Goodman put out a tweet saying that he's recovering in Los Angeles right now, right, Maxwell? I got the city?
Yep, it was Los Angeles. And I believe they said that he's likely out for January, but like they're hoping for February even.
I think the tail end of Jeff Goodman's tweet is that if he's 100%, they want to bring him back in February. So his season may very well not be done. But I also put this column together thinking that if we only have these three true games to go off of for film purposes, right? What did we learn? What can we take away? How can Nick Smith Jr.'s game translate to the NBA despite some of this concern we have about a lower body injury? Because, Maxwell, we've talked about it on Draft Deeper enough. When you have a lower body injury, the recovery time, depending on what it is, can be incredibly long, right? And you may not be yourself for a year, maybe like a year and a half. And so if you only have so much game film to go off of, and then an NBA team has to make a decision about, well, are we getting the player we saw more of in high school? Is the player we saw for these three games who Nick Smith's going to be? Can we even count on him to be like this, depending on what the medicals are coming back as? Like, there are so many questions that you and I certainly won't be able to answer because we're not looking at all that information, but we have three games of tape to go off of. So before I get into some of what I wrote in my column, I just want to ask you to start, Maxwell, just the broad question, the high level question before we start zooming in. What did you get to take away from him in those three games that we have on film right now? Do you view them as positive? Do you view them as negative? Or did they really not change your outlook on him as a prospect?
Yeah, he kind of stayed where I had him. Okay. It was a pretty neutral experience for me. I know that you all come here for the piping hot takes, and that's what No Ceilings is all about now. To be honest,
we really don't do the piping hot takes. No, we keep it measured.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think people like No Ceilings is that we're not takesmen. No Ceilings. So I think there were some things that I expected. Like defensively, like he tracks the ball well. Like knows where his man and the ball are. Not the most exciting defender. Guys can get through his chest a little bit because he's not super strong. Not a guy who pressures the rim a ton offensively, but he was better there than I expected him to be. Because if you watch some of those high school all-star games, like when there was a ton of other Lanc on the court, he kind of struggled with that in a lot of instances. So even though he wasn't getting there all the time, I thought the fact that, and again, like you can blame part of that on the lower body injury. I thought he did better there than I expected him to. His release is really quick. He has some shiftiness to him, really confident from long range, keeps his head up for teammates, moves it quick when need be, great eyes for the corners. Like just generally kind of what I expected. I would say the big surprises to me were that he did as well as he did at the rim. And I think he shot it a little more poorly, especially like off the dribble than I expected. I thought that would be kind of a little further along, and I thought the finishing would be quite a bit behind what it was, even though he didn't get to the rim a ton.
So he didn't really get into this, I'm the superstar point guard, I'm going to take over the offense, I'm going to do every possible thing for Arkansas. We didn't see that type of guard. What we saw over those three games was a more complimentary player, right? Somebody who was willing to play off the ball, who was willing to do the little things. He'd catch and drive, catch and shoot. And his offensive attack was a little more simplified than I think everybody would have wanted to see. But what I found, Maxwell, I went back and I watched those three games. I looked at the tape to write the column. I actually came away positively encouraged. If this is the player we're going to get in terms of Nick Smith jumping into the NBA, at least right away in his rookie season, I feel pretty good compared to what I thought I would feel about the type of player that we're getting. Because I think the touch is real. And you go back and you watch some of his floater game when he gets 2 feet in the paint. Man, we talk about this, and it's actually a topic I'm going to bring up later with a few other players that we're going to talk about tonight. But soft makes, hard makes, how's that ball going through the net? When Nick Smith makes a shot, that shot's wet, man. Like that ball is tickling the twine. It's not hitting the rim. I absolutely love that. And not only are we seeing that on his catch and shoot shots, on his deep attempts, we're seeing that on the runners as well. No hard clanks. He's not really hitting a lot of stuff off the back of the rim or the side of the backboard. Nick Smith, I believe, in my opinion, even though we only saw him make about 39% of his shot attempts overall, 30% for 3-point range, I think he's going to be a really good shooter. Yeah. I'm buying his mechanics. I'm buying the touch. I'm buying the whole package. I'm buying how he can relocate. You can run him off screens, get him off movement. He can set, turn. He's balanced. He's knocking that shot in. I believe in His pull-up game, I think, will eventually get there. Again, he was working himself back from an injury. So it's not just that he wasn't the type of takeover guard that I think we would have wanted him to be as like a top five or a top six prospect. But there is a lot of talent on that Arkansas team, and especially when there's another guy in whose name is Anthony Black, who needs the ball in his hands, who deserves to have the ball in his hands, trying to figure out where he falls in all of that offensively, right? While coming in the middle of the season, I think that's a little bit more difficult than people would want to give credit for. And it's not always the most easy thing to do. So I'm going to give Nick Smith a little bit of a pass on that front. But to me, the shot making stuff looked good from the perimeter. Now, you brought up the game inside. He did have one game where I believe it was 11 free throw attempts. Mm-hmm. And I think he was like 9 of 11 for the free throw line. That's more of what we would want to see: an aggressive driver, somebody who can put that downhill pressure on the rim to open everything up for himself, as well as all of his other teammates. We do want to see more of that stuff. But given that I think he's made a living as a pull-up shot maker, somebody who's much more perimeter-oriented than going inside, I think it was a mix of just comfort level, him trying to integrate himself within the offense, him making sure he's not stepping on anybody's toes, and then, oh, by the way, this is a knee injury that we're talking about. He probably doesn't have that full confidence in his knee to always want to be exploding towards the basket, going up and grabbing all these rebounds, battling in traffic. Like, I'm definitely going to give Nick Smith a little bit of a pass on that front, but it is still something, Maxwell, that we do need to monitor, because we've talked about it in No Ceilings. You go back and review Nick Smith's high school tape, you were mentioning it even in some of like the All-Star games, the exhibitions you were watching. It hasn't been a strength of his. But I guess my question to you, does he need to be this super amazing finisher at the basket to still be an effective guard, depending on the position role he's playing in the NBA?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say he needs it to be an effective guard. I would say he needs it to, like, if you're counting on him to be like an all-star, he 100% needs it. Like, just given how high the bar is, like, if you just look at like how good a guy like Donovan Mitchell or somebody like that is playing this season, like, to be in, if you're counting on him to be like in that elite tier of guard, which I think some people coming into the year thought he might be, then it's going to be something that I think he needs to have in his bag. If he is more that secondary option, I think there are ways around it. I think the fact that he does have like a really good floater, and that's one of those things that didn't like grade out crazy well this year. But like having a potent floater is like a great antidote for not being a
equalizer
who gets all the way to the rim. And like, I think he could eventually get to a point, like with the touch, like you talked about, like there's a chance he just becomes an elite floater guy. I don't think that's off the table at all for him. So I think there are ways around it. I think if that's the case as well, he needs to be really deadly from 3-point range. Like, he can't, if we're talking about him as like a high end starting guard, then he needs to really be in like a 38-39% type of range on higher volume. If you're talking about him in that echelon, if the rim finishing isn't there. So I think he can get away with it, but like, the floater really needs to be there. The outside shooting really needs to be there. If you're talking about him in that type of echelon, which is what I think teams are hoping for when you're drafting, like regardless of what a top seven pick typically turns into, like drafting at seven, you're not usually getting an all-star. But that's what teams and fan bases expect. A lot of times when they're drafting a guy there. So to, like, get that kind of outcome, that's what we're looking at.
To me, I think the ambidexterity is a little bit more of what
very concerning.
Off.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's not just about getting downhill and attacking basket and applying the rim pressure, but it's also making sure that when you do get downhill, you have ways to be able to beat defenses with either hand, right? Because NBA defenses are so good at taking away what you do well. They're going to make you do what's uncomfortable to you, and they're going to make Nick Smith go left. And when Nick Smith goes left, he has to have the confidence that if he gets all the way to the basket, he can get it up with his left hand, make that layup, put it down, whatever he needs to, or he needs to be comfortable with pulling up, going left, as opposed to just kind of coming off a screen, going right, fading to his right. He needs to have that other part to his game there, which to me, that was the more concerning thing with what I saw on the tape. Like, I highlighted in my column, for example, there was a play where he caught the ball on the left wing, had a post up on a guard. He could have absolutely faked that guy out, went to his left. And I think the big man helping probably would have also been faked out and would have expected him to be going right, and he probably would have had that left completely open. He would have been able to turn, bank that shot in from the left side. Instead, he turns to the right side, goes to this now heavily contested floater, and it's just not the type of look that we want to see Nick Smith taking. And that was just one example that I pulled from the film. But overall, that to me, when we talk about guards in the NBA, it's not just that they're willing to get to the basket. They're also able to finish from a variety of angles. They're able to do the up and unders, the reverses from different angles. All of these different types of things are what we talk about when we ask the question, is the player a good finisher? So that to me is definitely a concern that you and I would want to highlight for his game. I do want to bring it back to a positive, though, that I found. I actually was encouraged by some of the passing that I saw.
I agree. I have always been like way higher in his passing than I feel like. Because I think we have people on the No Sun Screw that like don't view him as a point guard.
Correct. Which I don't know if he's doing anything crazy as a passer, right? Like when we talk about like making basic reads versus making more advanced, like you're able to see the corner kick out from a mile away. You're able to do all these different types of skip passes to keep the like, I don't know if he's going to be able to, or if he's going to hit all of those all the time in the NBA, right? Like if you're throwing the ball in his hands, you're expecting him to be like this 30 to 35% usage rate playmaker. I'm not sure that that's the type of role that you would want him to have, but as a secondary creator, like you talked about, like bring him into a pick and roll action, he can make those basic reads at a pick and roll. He can hit the pocket pass. He can hit at all these different angles. And I think those basic reads are more or less what you want him to be able to do. And the other thing I noticed about it too, Maxwell, I'll let you talk about his passing. You mentioned when we talk about driving and getting to the basket, that type of pressure creates angles for passing, right? To set up all those different attempts for everybody else. I think because of the shooting, and you even see it on the tape, he does have shooting gravity, which brings defenses towards him, especially in pick and roll sets, right? They want to double him to make sure he's not taking an easy jump shot. And those types of opportunities, he can hit that pocket pass to the slipping roll, the slipping roll man, right? Like he can hit guys when he brings that double, he can make the pass out of the double. That's more or less what I want to see from a Nick Smith Jr. Just don't lose the ball in those situations. Make enough shots to open up the rest of that pick and roll game. When the double comes, hit the guy that you're supposed to, and bam, done. Clean offensive possession, walk away with the 2 points or whatever it is. So that's what I'm encouraged about, that I saw those things from it.
Yeah, so I think I came out higher on his high school film as far as the passing. Like a lot of the stuff at Arkansas as far as like setting guys up was really straightforward. Like you said, just simple pick and roll. It's a lob pass to a cutter who is wide open. It's really straightforward. But in high school, I felt like he was able to see multiple reads, you know, out of a pick and roll, and was able to just be a little bit more creative. And we didn't get to see that. And part of it was just like sample size. Part of it was roll. But I do think there's more than he got to show as a passer. And if you're comparing him just to like other guards at the top of this class, like he's not as creative out of the pick and roll as a guy like Keyonte is. Like Keyonte, like you set up a pick and roll for him, like you really don't know what he's going to do. Like he might split it. He might reject the screen.
Well,
like,
for better or worse, you don't know.
Exactly. I was going to say, I think I trust him a little bit more than I trust Keyonte in a pick and roll. But then like compared to like a Cason Wallace, like I think it's like night and day. Like I don't think Cason has like nearly the juice creatively as far as like setting up another teammate that Nick Smith does. And again, a lot of that's going back to high school film. So I hope that we can see him again just so that we can get a better feel for it. But I think that there's more than he got to show.
Yep.
And I think part of it too is that like the shooting was always a little iffy there. Like it was like Trevon Brazil and then like he was the other shooter. So it wasn't like an ideal situation as far as like, oh, I can like spray this one out to the corner. I can like hit this guy in the slot with this after I get all the way to the rim and don't like my look, and I can kick it back out. Like it just wasn't a great situation from that standpoint for him to show it off on top of the roll.
I'm glad you brought that up though, Maxwell, because that might be a point that you can touch on as well. When we were talking earlier in the year about Anthony Black, we were concerned about what type of shooter is he going to be? How is he going to be able to space the floor? This team was in dire need of shooting. Now you lose Brazil. Mm-hmm. Now you have Anthony Black, who I think he's been better than we expected, but he's
As far as the shooting, yeah.
He's still technically a streaky shooter, though, to an extent, right? Like, Ricky Council is a streaky shooter. He's much more baked inside the arc than he is outside of it. So when we talk about Nick Smith and everything that he might do when or when he doesn't get 2 feet in the paint, he's also really not being asked to be that kind of player, though. They kind of need him on the outside. Do they not, to take advantage of the spacing that he provides? They need him to be that catch and shoot guy for when Anthony Black does break down the defense, when he gets an opportunity to get one of those driving lanes and then he has to kick it out. Anthony Black needs somebody to kick it out, right? Oh boy. Oh boy. Maxwell's got to do daddy duties. No worries. But yeah, with Nick Smith, like, he's kind of forced to be on the perimeter, and they need him to be able to take advantage of those opportunities when he gets the ball and he's able to catch and shoot, knock it down. They don't always need him being the guy to put all the pressure on the rim. They have Council to do that. They have Anthony Black to be able to do that. When Jordan Walsh has it going, for better or worse, sometimes he has it going, sometimes he doesn't. He's certainly been inconsistent this year, but he's another guy they want to have cutting. They want to get him involved in some post-up actions. They want him being able to score around the basket. So I think Nick Smith, for all that we talk about, the at-rim stuff, the rebounding, some of those issues, I definitely think that Nick Smith's role on this Arkansas team should be taken with a grain of salt and put in a better context. That's really what I would say about that. But overall, we can talk about the outside shooting. We can talk about the passing. Mm-hmm. I actually came away pleasantly surprised with some of the defense as well. He wasn't perfect on that side of the ball, but defensively, I think on the ball, I think he sits in a good stance. I think he can certainly move his feet. He can keep up with guys on the perimeter. I think more of his defensive shortcomings, and it can even come back to some of the finishing inside, I think it might be body related. He's a big guard. He's frail. He needs to put on muscle. He needs to put on a little bulk, a little weight. But I think when we look at him as an on-ball defender at the point of attack, what I think he could be potentially, when we look at his shooting ability, his ability to score from certainly those two levels, that mid-range, that pull-up, that floater when he gets 2 feet in the paint, the catch-and-shoot three-point, his ability to hit three-point shots off the dribble, which you and I would believe, I think eventually we'll get there for him. We start piecing together this really interesting type of guard who you can throw some comparisons in there to somebody like a Bradley Beal if he hits like his absolute upside. And to me, that's a valuable player to make a bet on. Now, obviously, I'm not making a bet on him over any number of Victor Scoot, both the Thompson twins. I'm still holding on to some of the Cam Whitmore stock, and you and I are going to talk about him a little bit later in this show. But when we put him in a conversation with guys like Brandon Miller, with guys like Kayson Wallace and Jairus Walker and Keontae George, like, I think Nick Smith is firmly in that conversation, regardless of what else we're going to see this year, whether he plays more games and whether he doesn't. And the last line before I kind of let you finish off any other thoughts on Nick Smith, I put this in my column. Sometimes making the bet on that player, if the tape checks out, is worth it. Just ask the Cleveland Cavaliers if they're happy with the Darius Garland pick a few drafts ago. And that thought is really what inspired me to write the column in the first place, because I believe in what I saw on the high school tape. I initially, when I first started watching him, Maxwell, I wasn't enthused, but I dug in more and more, and I realized, like, this guy could be an absolutely lethal shooter from the outside. If more of that passing touch comes along, the defense comes along, like, this guy is going to be a legit one or two, projected more as like a combo guard in the NBA for years to come, more in that like Bradley Beal mold. I'm trusting that regardless of whether he plays 3 games, 5 games, 10 games, if this 3-game sample size is all we get, I'm buying on what I saw prior and not just putting everything into the fact that he didn't get enough opportunities this year. And I'm going to make that Darius Garland type of bet on Nick Smith, and I'm still going to have him inside my top 10. And I don't know how you still feel about his ranking on your board, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, I believe he was at 6 on my board before he got hurt. It's hard to see, like, even if he doesn't play again the rest of the year, it's like hard for me to see moving him too much one way or the other. To be quite honest, like, I just haven't been overly enthused with a lot of other guys in that same range. I don't see a lot of like gigantic upside in a lot of people in that part of the draft. So for me, it's like I still kind of see it in Smith, because the finishing to me was encouraging. Honestly, I'm kind of with you as far as the defense, and I'm always a firm believer in, like, everybody gets bigger, everybody gets stronger. I think especially if he's going to be covering ones, like, I'm not that worried about it in the long term. Like, if he for some reason needs to be a two long term, maybe that's a little trickier. But I like, to me, the flaws just aren't that severe, and he still offers a lot of other really good stuff that I think the floor is honestly kind of safe on him. And like when you're betting in that range, like, he's one of the few guys that has, I feel like, a solid stable floor, combined with like some real shot at good upside, because I believe in the playmaking as much as I do.
So let me ask you a question. If you're the San Antonio Spurs, the Orlando Magic, if you're the Toronto Raptors, isn't the type of guard you're probably looking at more in the mold of like a Nick Smith? Right. If you're not at that number two pick and you don't have the chance to bring in a true point like a Scoot Henderson, and you're drafting in the need for like a combo guard, there's these guys like Nick Smith we can talk about, the Cason Wallaces, the Keontae Georges. Like, aren't you kind of looking more at Nick Smith's direction as maybe we're a team like Orlando that has these jumbo initiators, and all we kind of need is a guard who can set up, catch and shoot, knock everything down, be like a tertiary creator from the perimeter? Like, are you more comfortable looking in his direction? And that's kind of where I went with where I'm trying to rank him on my board, just maybe not in relation to some of these other wings and forwards that you and I might want to make a bet on over but in relation to the guards, that's kind of where my line of thinking is. Whereas I don't think Nick Smith needs the ball in his hands all the time to be effective. I moved Nick Smith closer on my board to where Keontae Georges, because we had that fun conversation in our No Ceilings group chat, and I kind of saw where Corey and some of the other guys were going with it. Keontae, the more I'm seeing it, the more I think he does need the ball in his hands. You need to let Keontae cook. I'm not sure that I'm projecting him in the same type of off-ball role that I could project Nick Smith as, and that's really because with Keontae, I'm not buying all the same off-ball shooting stuff that I would with like a Nick Smith. I'm just not buying his shooting stroke as much. And I kind of felt that way before the year started. And then those first few games came in, he got really hot. And now we've seen over a much larger sample size as the year has gone on, that outside shot has really been streaky, 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 man. But he's had some really good pull-up stuff, right? When he's been able to go either direction inside the arc, he's been getting to the free throw line, he's been able to finish some through contact. Like, he's been a better 2-point scorer than I think I probably would have projected him as early on. I thought he was much, much, much more perimeter oriented, like a 3-point gunner. He's kind of showed me the opposite as he's been at Baylor. And I think he's actually been a really, really fun, tough shot maker inside the arc. With Nick Smith, I can project him, in my opinion, to be a clear off-ball guy. I don't think he needs the ball in his hands all the time. He's got to set everything up, dribble, 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 let him cook. And so I would much rather, if I'm looking for a guard towards the top of the draft, other than Scoot Henderson, obviously, maybe I'm leaning more in the direction of somebody like a Nick Smith and some of those other guards. Yeah. And that's just kind of where I'm at to wrap up.
Yeah, I'm in a similar place. To me, though, like, Smith is like a pretty clear cut above like the other guards. Like, I think if you buy like the playmaking upside at all, the like everything else is there. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be like an all-world defender, but like, I don't love Keontae defensively. Cason is very good defensively, but like, just is not like a real pick and roll scorer. He's just very complimentary on offense, which is fine, like, for the range that I think he's projected to go in at this point. And then like, yeah, I just don't, I always feel so bad saying this. Like, I just don't trust Keontae to the same extent that I trust Nick Smith. Like, I feel like Nick Smith just takes better care of the ball. So that's kind of where I'm at. I think he's got a little bit more upside, and he's a little bit more natural of a playmaker and lead guard.
Where are you at, like, just like a quick temperature check with Cason Wallace nowadays? Like, where, because I, in person, I was at the Garden. I probably
saw, you were like down on first... him when I was like the most into him that I've been.
Yes, but I also saw what's been his worst game of the year in college at Madison Square Garden in person, and yet I still come away intrigued by his skill set every night, because he has everything you want from an NBA guard, from a skill perspective, from a defensive perspective. He has all of the ingredients to be a freaking awesome complimentary piece. we just don't see him more often than not be like that top option that I think we want him to be. But this Kentucky team has also been really bad. Like, I'm not a fan. Yeah. we talk about with Kentucky, with Duke, with Villanova. Like, some of these teams are just really freaking bad and giving these prospects or doing them any favors to be able to succeed and show what they might be able to do early on at the next level. So, like, we talk about, like, the Kentucky thing with guards. Mm-hmm. That might be coming out tenfold with Cason Wallace.
But it's also like the NBA. Why this entire Kentucky situation was so predictable, because like every year, like, well, no, you have to give some extra credit to the Kentucky guards because their offense is always so bad. Like the coaching and playing the offense, it's just so bad that you have to give them extra credit. And it's like, oh man, the Kentucky offense is brutal this year. It's like, yeah, this is what happens every year.
He doesn't have anybody to bail him out. He's got Oscar Shibuy down low for a post up if he can actually make the entry pass. Like, that's it.
It's that, or it's give it to Sevier Wheeler to dribble 17 times. those are your two options.
Like, Antonio Reeves has been bad. Like, this is not.
That one bums me out. It's like wild. He was an Illinois State guy. So,
yeah.
That's what he gets for not letting me see him at Redbird Arena this season and transferring out. But yeah, the Antonio Reeves thing is a bummer. But yeah, I think that with Kaysen, I am like late lottery, maybe just behind that. I think like realistically, if you put a gun to my head, like if I put him 15th on a board, like he's going to be better than that many players in the draft. But it just like upside wise, I don't want to say he's not an unexciting player. Like the defense is wildly exciting. Like he is a special, special defensive player. He can shoot off the catch. I think he's like a good decision maker. Like he doesn't do dumb stuff with the ball at all. Very good at the simple stuff. There's just not much beyond that at all. And he's not like a real threat as an off the dribble scorer. Like he does it efficiently, but it's not like, oh God, if I go under the screen, like Kaysen Wallace is going to light me up from three. Like he doesn't have that same type of like, gusto
it's funny you're not 100% afraid of him getting to his spots. Like you don't think he has the type of burst to get to a spot in a certain situation. But the funny thing about Kaysen though is that when he's there, when he is in that spot, he has the floater touch to be able to knock something down. He can finish around the basket. He can get to a pull-up shot. He can hit the three-point shot. He's actually been really effective. I think he's been like 50% from three-point range over a certain like X number of games. Like he's been a much better shooter outside of a few stinkers than I think we might give him credit for. But he's not pronounced in his offensive game, I guess is what we will say. Like he can put up like 16 to 18 points in a game, and it will be some of the quietest 16 to 18 you've seen from any of these like top shelf, top 15, top 20 prospects.
Yeah, like the only game where it was like, oh man, like Kaysen Wallace is cooking on offense was against like, it was Florida A&M. It was like the one game where it was like, oh man, like he really did some stuff off the dribble. Like that's like the one game where he did that, and it's Florida A&M. So it's hard to get too excited about it when like that's the case. Because like every other game is just very, like it's just coming through the flow of the offense, which like, again, like this is why he's going to be a great complimentary player, but. That's enough Kaysen Wallace stuff.
So it sounds like our rankings are probably the same right now. I would have Scoot, Nick Smith, Keyonte George, Kaysen Wallace in that order.
I'm like so I the Keyonte people are gonna kill me. I might have Kaysen ahead of Keyonte.
Oh boy. I don't blame you for that, because my last thought that I was going to say was I am leaving the door open for Kaysen Wallace to be the second guard for me in this draft behind Scoot Henderson. I'm still leaving that door open just because of how freaking awesome the defense is.
I think the role potential is probably smaller, but it's just easier for me to picture Kaysen Wallace on a really great team right now.
Yes.
And that's ultimately kind of how I view things. So
I had to get your bigger picture take on the guards.
Yeah.
You and I just haven't talked on camera for a while.
No, it's been too long. It's been a minute. Yeah. And so through text, it's never as thorough.
we just had to get some thoughts out of the way. All right. So the floor is going to be yours for this next player, Maxwell, even though I've waxed poetic about him in a little bit of writing, but not nearly as many words as what you put together in one of your latest prospect overviews, which is titled "You Have to Deal with Noah Clowney," which is one of the most perfect titles ever, because it's almost like draft Twitter's been focused on what some of these other big men have been doing, right? Like where's Derek Lively right now? Where's Kelo Ware? We're even seeing this massive swell of Donovan Klingon buzz, which I'm going to address on podcast episodes later in this week on the No Ceilings NBA front. But we're not really throwing Noah Clowney into that conversation as much in certain draft circles. And I feel like you kind of sort of have to, even though I would peg him more as a forward by positional classification. He's much more of a 4-5 like a 4-3. So I'm putting him in this conversation, and he very well could be the best quote unquote big man in this class outside of the obvious Mr. Victor Wembanyama. Like, I think there's an absolute real chance that happens. He's drafted in the lottery ahead of some of these other names that we could throw out there. And it's almost as if no one's really talking about it, but you found him really interesting when Alabama season was first kicking off. And yeah, we talked about it, early. You, Steven, and I in the group chat. And I kind of said, I kind of brushed it off, and not to like throw shade on you, but I brushed it off. I was like, but I think Clowney might be like a next year guy, right?
Yeah, which I kind of did too. Like, because I wrote about him like my first column of the year, and it's basically like, this is a down the road name to keep an eye. Like, even like being optimistic and like saying I liked the guy was very like later.
Right. But now he's started to put together some performances where you're looking at his numbers and you're going, oh crap, this guy's legit. Right. Like the shooting sample size, even though it's not a ton, he's still knocking down 31% right now from 3-point range on 3 attempts per game. So that's really interesting for a stretch forward. He's a really efficient 2-point finisher. He finally dipped below the 70% mark. Like for weeks, you and I were talking about him as like a 72% on twos. Now he's at like 68.6. He's still blocking 1.3 shots per game, 9.6 points per game, 8.5 rebounds, and 18.9 PER for a freshman forward who we didn't know what we were getting, right? We didn't know how much Alabama was going to turn to him either. They have multiple forward/bigs. They have Charles Bediako. Bediako was supposed to be the main guy in that front court. We're supposed to like take this big step forward. We're going to be talking about him in the draft. Yet here comes Noah Clowney, this super fascinating 6'10" forward who moves like a wing out there, who can cover a lot of ground on defense, who can block shots, who can hit perimeter shots, who finishes effectively in certain role situations. And you start to put this full package together, I know you're going to break down your column and podcast form. I want you to, because you took a really fascinating writing angle that I wasn't expecting, as you always do. But
yeah.
Why should people be having to quote unquote deal with Noah Clowney?
Yeah, because he's here and he's like not going away. Like, it's just one of those things where, like, I think a lot of times early on in the year, like guys start hot. Guys start hot every single year, and then at a certain point, it's like, oh well, that was that. Like we'll see you next year, pal. And like with Noah Clowney, like the opposite has happened. Like he started and it was like, oh, like this is kind of intriguing. And then he hung 22 on South Dakota State. It was like a solid mid-major program. And ever since then, like the foot has not come off the gas. Like it has just been a series of like good game. All right. Oh, Noah Clowney, like another good one today. And like even the games that aren't blow away, it's just like, yeah, he took care of business out there. Like did exactly what you would want him to do.
Yep.
Like, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the Alabama-Kentucky game yesterday, if you want to call it a game.
That was something.
It was a shellacking. But and like in that game, like he just did what you wanted him to do. Like low maintenance. It was a Bediako game because they were just going to light up Oscar Tshiebwe with pick and roll. So he took more of a backseat, scored eight points on 5 shots. Like Noah Clowney is here, he is in the conversation, and as long as he's producing like this, with his movement and size and athleticism, like he's the guy that NBA teams are going to be interested in. So whether or not you're interested in him is a question that every like pundit and scout like needs to start asking themselves, because he's going to be a factor in this draft. And I'd be stunned like if he doesn't at least put his name in, even if things really tail off. Like he's in the conversation, he's firmly in the mix.
So over the course of, we're looking at now a little bit over a month, in every game that he's, I will say that he's attempted a three, because he did not attempt a three in the Memphis game, but in every game that he's attempted a three since December 3rd, he's knocked at least one down. Mm-hmm. That's impressive to me, right? Some guy who we didn't expect him to be able to showcase this level of shooting touch this early on, we're seeing it. We're seeing all of these fascinating different pieces about his game. You hit on a bunch of different things in your column, Maxwell.
Yeah.
But really, the thing that we need to talk about the most to me is not necessarily the inside scoring, the outside shooting, but you touched on a few things that I want you to go into detail with, particularly the defense and then some of the passing flashes that we're starting to see with some of the full court ball handling as well. It's getting pretty intriguing to my eye.
For sure. So, yeah. So let's start with the defense, because I think that's like potentially the most interesting thing.
That's a selling point to me.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
So it's not like fully fleshed out, and that's going to be the case with a lot of big men. With Clowney, it's important to remember this is also like sort of a G.G. Jackson situation where like he is way younger than most of his peers. Like he is very young for his grade. So he could easily be a high school senior right now. The basic rim protection instincts are good. Like he's an attentive defender. He doesn't get caught napping off of the ball, which is good because a lot of times he has to play at the four. Like we talked about, like he's out there with Bediako a lot. Another time too, like they play Nick Pringle, who's 6'9", was like a really great JUCO player last year, and just like a nice complimentary player, like one of those guys that like if you're watching as many games as we do, it's like, yeah, that guy's not like a pro, but like boy do I like watching him play basketball. So he's out there with just like other good bigs a lot of times. So like his minutes at the five aren't massive, but he knows what he's doing, and he's very quick to spring into action when he sees stuff. So like he'll see a cut, he'll get into position, he'll meet a guy at the rim. He'll bite on fakes a little too much, which is common for like every like 6'8" and above 18-year-old basketball player. Like it's not something I'm willing to kill him over. But I think the two things that are most interesting with Clowney are, I'd really say the number one thing is just his ability to cover ground. So the first thing that stuck out as I went through the film was how many of his block shots came in transition. Like if there is a steal or if there's a long rebound that the other team grabs and gets down the court, he hauls ass down the floor. Like
he
runs so hard to get back on defense, and just like the rim to rim energy that he plays with is hard. Like a lot of big guys, like that's the number one knock you hear on him is like, oh, like this guy's lazy. Like you're like every big guy prospect gets called lazy because they don't sprint up and down the floor every single play. But Clowney does. Like Clowney plays like a super high level of effort. So he runs really hard to get back on defense, which coaches will love. Which again, those things matter. They help gain trust, they help get you minutes. Getting minutes helps teams just keep giving you a chance. And then the other area where the covering ground helps is on the perimeter. So there's one play that I clipped from I believe it was from the Houston game, where he gets so lost defensively. There's a ghost screen that gets set by Jairus Walker, and he hedges on like the other side of it. So like he is so far out of position by the time that Jairus goes to the screen that like he's just got to sprint, and they end up doing kind of like an X out situation where someone goes to rotate to Jairus. So he's got to go to that guy's man. And the ball ends up, so Jairus gets the ball and then kicks it to Arsenault in the corner. And Clowney literally sprints like halfway across the floor. Like he is on the opposite elbow extended basically at the start of this play.
And gets a damn hand on that shot.
Gets a block on the opposite corner after like two pretty quick passes. Like the skips here were quick. Like it wasn't like, oh, this guy threw a lazy pass, or like it's a kind of a looping pass and he's able to recover. Like he really covers a ton of ground really quickly. So like, even when he does have these lapses that are going to be pretty common among a young player or a team, like in this case with Houston, just runs like a really nice, like go screen, really nice, clever offensive set. Like the motor and physical tools allow him to get back into plays, even if something happens where he takes himself out of them.
100%. And it's something that we try to talk about a lot with big men is the aspect of mobility, right? We want these guys mobile enough to be able to cover a certain amount of ground, right? If they're not going to be this deep drop coverage big who defenses are scheming to funnel opposing players into constantly, like a Walker Kessler or a Rudy Gobert, or throw X big man out there who would traditionally be that deep drop type of big, a Brook Lopez. If you're not that type of big man, you need to have some switchability in your game, which Noah Clowney checks that box. You need to be able to cover ground. You need to be able to contest shots from all different positions on the floor. The way that he moves, the way that he runs Maxwell, when you pointed out that play, and when I go back and I watch that clip and he gets that block, you know who that reminds me of? And I'm not making
the direct comparison. I'm intrigued. That's
that Evan Mobley type of shit that everybody loved when he was coming out of the draft. That ability to, he just runs the floor like a freaking wing, and he's able to make that type of recovery and get a hand on the ball. That's the type of stuff that Mobley did in college, where everyone's like, he could be this transcendent type of defensive big man to where we cannot let him fall out of the top three. Now, their offensive games are, I think worlds apart is a little harsh to my man, Noah Clowney, but certainly they're not close. Yeah, like they're not close right now. So,
and I would say the other thing that like Mobley was a lot better at was just like staying in front when switched on to smaller guys. Yeah. Like Clowney can do it, but it's just not consistent yet. Like sometimes he's a little too upright. Other times, like I call it like playing hunchy, where like he doesn't have bend in his knees. He's just kind of like leaning forward a little bit. And like a lot of big guys are guilty of that. And like that's how they end up getting beat. And like Mobley was way better about just like getting into a stance and not letting guys buy
him. Right. And yeah, Mobley sits in a stance better than Clowney. It's not just like, it's not the one-on-one type of stuff, but it's the ground coverage. It's the ability to be able to do it if he's called upon. Mm-hmm. And then when guys do challenge him at the basket, man, he's stronger than you think, right? Like he's listed what, 6'10", 210 pounds. He plays much stronger than that though. For a guy who's as young as he is, like you pointed out.
Yeah, like he fouls like a good amount, but like a lot of like young freshman big.
So would a lot of other 6'10" lanky forwards who are getting challenged by older college players. Yeah,
it's usually like those type of guys that like you look up like how many times they foul per 40 minutes, and it's like 6.5 or like somebody's like wild number. Like with Clowney, it's 4.1. Like it's like okay, yeah, he's fouling out there, but it's not like oh, like he just can't help himself, like. Guys bump into him and he caves his chest and his arms come down and he gets called for it. Like he's ahead of schedule in that sense. Right. Like he's not weak with how he plays defensively.
So like you want any big man to sit around like three fouls, right? Like that's probably like that's a reasonable element to work with. So if you just look through the box scores, I can count out four games out of 14 where he had four or more fouls, right? Mm-hmm. So that's for a freshman who, again, we didn't expect him to be getting the type of playing time that he is right now. That's pretty freaking good. And you just put together all the different things that lead to the upside. You commented in your column, you really think he could be this modern type of big man that everybody's looking for in the NBA. Do you think he's going to be one of these guys who needs a center next to him full time in his career, not just like early on? Do you think eventually he becomes more of like a five man? Do you think he's going to be one of these more modern, you've even talked about it on this podcast, one of these more modern, bigger fours, right? That NBA teams are now starting to buy into. Is that really what he is in the NBA?
He really needs to shoot it if he's going to be that. Like, I think the idealized version of Noah Clowney is a five. Like, I think ideally you hope that, like, because he's so young and he's already pretty strong, that, like, the frame fills out and you can run him as your five. Because I think, like, right now the ball skills just aren't there. Like the ball gets knocked out of his hands a lot. Like that's like the number one cause of his turnovers. One to two assist to turnover ratio right now, and like that's how he loses the ball. So like if he is going to be a five, like he needs to get stronger with the ball, but also like that happens to him on the perimeter quite a bit as well, and like that's a little bit more disastrous. It's like a worse live ball turnover situation when that happens at the three-point line versus when it happens under your basket. And like, yeah, like he's fine if he's attacking in a straight line, but he doesn't have like a ton of dribble craft. Like he'll grab and go on occasion and things like that, but he's not a guy who can really like break somebody down off the dribble or do anything like interesting at all to get his own look at this stage. So to me, like the most interesting version of Noah Clowney is a five. I think he like kind of has to be a four out of the gate. So like, that's like the scary thing to me is like, if the shot regresses,
is he going to be able to get the playing time?
Yeah. Like then what? Like, cause he's a really efficient finisher right now, but like the volume on it isn't crazy. And it's mostly off of like cuts. Like it's a lot of just like, oh, I see an opening. I'm cutting hard. If you get me the ball, like anywhere inside the elbow, I can take off from really far away, go up with the
three. He's been a good roll man, though. He's in the 73rd percentile in roll finishes.
So yeah, so he can do pick and roll. He can cut. Like, it's really basic stuff for the most part. I think with
isn't that Clowney, what he's going to be in the NBA though? Anyways, he's going to be like a play finisher. Like how creative are you expecting a play finisher? Whether that's on rolls, on cuts, on transition dunks, on open jump shots, open spot ups. Like that's what he's going to be though, right?
For sure. I just think that is a four is a lot less exciting. Like if you just like go through
that's
like
fair.
Team by team and look at who plays the four on like good teams, they're usually guys that have a little bit more juice in that. Like
they
if it's
they
like Denver, it's like Aaron handling. Gordon. Yep. It's like okay, like. Jaren Jackson, like he's again like a guy who's like really turnover prone, but just like elite movement shooter to like a degree that I don't see Noah Clowney being. Like Zion Williamson can put it on the floor. Dallas, like their fours are more like play finisher types, but even like I don't know, like a guy like Christian Wood, who like can play a lot of minutes there, like has some creative juice. Maxi Kleber, I mean like him and Powell are both kind of straightforward, so. Like there's teams where he can get away with it, but I think in a lot of situations, if he's going to be a four, like it would benefit him a lot more to have those ball skills if you're like hoping that he's a starter.
I would agree with you 100%. I definitely think the more interesting outcome for him is as a five, as long as he's going to hold up as one. So, I mean, to kind of close out the Clowney conversation, Maxwell, like we've put together a pretty interesting group of details on one player to where you start to think about draft stock and you start to think about where would you take a swing on this type of player. Like if he hits his ultimate upside, which would be one of these really unique, I can finish any type of play five men who can also protect the rim, switch out on the perimeter, cover ground. That's an incredibly valuable player to have in today's NBA, and that to me would warrant like a top 20 pick. But you might look at his numbers and you might look at his production and where he's at right now, and you might not think that's worth a top 20 pick. You might not even think that's worth a first round pick. Like it wouldn't shock me if people told me that Noah Clowney's like 40th or 45th on their boards. Like that wouldn't shock me. But I think with a player like Clowney, the reason why you would take him maybe a little earlier than people would expect, not to get into the whole pre-draft conversation, but like you would expect that player by next year and then the year after is returning value much closer to like a top 10, top 15 pick
than
you would be in a pick in like the 30s or the 40s. Like, are you kind of in that same boat? Like maybe you don't love ranking him as high as you might be, but better to take that player and get him in your developmental system than trying to wait and gamble and watch him walk somewhere else.
Yeah, I think like 15 on is like my like kind of range for him. Like I wouldn't take him lotto.
It's really not that crazy, man. It's really
Yeah. Because I think with him, like just in general, like the basketball is getting so good that like if I don't feel like you have like some level of like ball skills, I think it's really hard for me to like take you lottery. Because even a guy like Gigi Jackson, like people want to gripe with the passing, but it's like, have you seen the guy put the ball on the floor? Like it's uncanny for a man his size. Like if Clowney had something like that, like if Clowney had like a nasty handle at least or something like that, I'd be a little bit more excited. The passing is just not that consistent. So like even at his age, I'm still just a little leery of going like that far into the pool with him. But I think beyond that, especially like if I'm a rebuilding team that has like multiple first round picks or something like that, and I can be like, let's just stick them in the G League for a year. And if I've got a good G League head coach, like that's a great situation. Or if I'm a team like the Clippers and I'm a team where I know like, hey, we've got a lot of good like organizational infrastructure and our move has just been like, we take the upside guys and then we package them and trade them. Like that could be an interesting move for a team too.
Could
like,
you imagine the Clippers eventual possible front court of like him and Musa Diabate? How freaking fun would that be? Like that's the type of move that a team like the Clippers could absolutely take. I could see a playoff team taking a chance on him, right? Like they have positions certainly filled out and a team with multiple first round picks that you talked about. Like I could see Indiana, despite Indiana having a few big men, we don't know how many of those big men are still going to be there. We would expect Miles Turner is probably on his way out, given the news that we heard over this past weekend. There are a number of clubs who I could see taking a swing on Clowney in the first round, right? We've seen maybe Brooklyn might take a swing on him. They've already had a really nice developmental prospect in Nick Claxton, who we're seeing him turn out like an all-defensive type of upside, right? All-defensive team, maybe they're a team that, oh, we've kind of walked this blueprint a little bit before. Now we're getting a guy who maybe he can also do some of the things that Nick Claxton can do while actually being a plus contributor offensively. Maybe that's the type of guy we want to bring into our developmental system. The Memphis Grizzlies, they love freaking taking on players like a Noah Clowney type. Like they, there are multiple different avenues to where he can end up being drafted in the first round. So I don't feel bad about ranking him there at all. To me, he's a top 25 guy, and I don't see that changing, particularly in the near future. So that was our conversation around what we wrote about this past week. We could dig into a little bit about what happened much more recently, aka on Saturday, Maxwell. There were a number of awesome prospect games that took place. I texted the group chat.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Name a day that I can that you can remember in recent memory where we've had like this many prospects go off in the same day. So we thought it would be fun to, you and I can each take one, maybe two. I'm definitely going to cheat. I'm definitely going to talk about two. But if you want to take a few, go ahead. But at least one prospect performance that you wanted to highlight from this weekend and go, all right, now it's time to key back in on somebody who we may not have been paying attention as much to, or there might have been a little bit negative buzz about his game. Who in your opinion, do we need to start buying back in on?
Cam Whitmore. Because I, and like, this is like on me, because like in my same like Noah Clowney column, like I felt like I was like really hard on him and Amen Thompson. And like, I meant what I said. I'll stick by it. Like but I think Cam has been like inconsistent out of the gate, but this was the first game where it felt like, oh, he's moving like Cam Whitmore, the game against Xavier. Like he was doing way better laterally in terms of just like immediate on ball, like reaction time and just like sticking with guys too, like walling off, staying in front of players like Colby Jones and things like that. His like mismatch ability, like getting like Nunji on him and then just like burning him and getting to the basket, showing off speed with his cutting. Like it looked like what I expected Cam Whitmore to look like before we knew that he was dealing with an injury. That first step quickness is back, that second step bounce is back. He was just so active and engaged as a cutter again. But defensively was like the biggest thing where it was like, oh no, like is he just actually a slow defender or is it still like injury? What is it? Like I wrote my column about how like he fell down a bunch of times in that game last weekend and
he's
like the commentators
still, he's still kind of clumsy, dude. Like he's still
it's weird. It's
even
weird
on some of his finishes, he's like flying like halfway across the court on some of his layups. And I'm like, dude, how is this even happening? I have something I wanted to ask you about that because you're much more of a body guy.
Okay,
I am, because you've actually gone through your own physical transformation.
Yeah.
He just seems incredibly, incredibly top heavy. How do you fix that? How do you honestly go about fixing something like that?
It's hard. So this is like to get into my own like body, I guess. Like like I've always said, like everyone can get stronger, but like people do have like genetic predispositions for like where they put on size. And like the example I always use is Marvin Williams. Like Marvin Williams is like this big like beanpole kid, and everyone's like, oh, like when he bulks up forever, and then like it was just all on his legs. Like he got bigger, and it was just like, oh no, Marvin Williams is like a ground bound guy now. He's
Cam
bigger.
Whitmore looks like if he eats a steak, it's going straight to his chest. And
So for my like personal body type, like I'm obviously not the athlete that Cam Whitmore is.
Sure.
But like I have like a fairly similar like predisposition where like it's really easy for me to put on size and like my chest and back, and like my limbs extremely difficult. Like takes a lot of work. Like I have to do like a lot of extra leg work and a lot of extra arm work to like look proportional.
Even out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So like it is possible. You just have to like really focus on it and like be deliberate about it and be aware of it. It's like it's doable.
I don't think he's too slow footed. I actually think his feet are fine. I think it's more so he's just trying to not move incorrectly to where he's falling down or he's like off balance. He can't bring himself back up. And it's really fascinating to watch.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't get to see like a ton of him when he was like young. So I wonder like was he always?
How did we get here?
Yeah, exactly. Because like he's such a force, and it's like,
how did we get here, and how can we reverse it?
Yeah, well, like, and I can't imagine that there was like an eighth grader walking around that looked like that. Like, it's just all so odd to me. Like, he's just such a bizarre athlete in a good way. Like, he's
crazy, but he's so, but when he has it going, he's so effective.
Like, yeah, like, yeah, and I thought just points. Yeah. I thought he looked the most in control of his body that he's looked since he's been back in terms of, yeah, just like initial on ball reaction and just movement. Like I really loved how he moved defensively and how he cut in particular in that game. So like obviously big scoring game, but it's one of those games. Like if you just go back and watch the film, like you will leave so encouraged with how he looked from an athletic and movement standpoint.
Yep, and to an extent, I also have a similar player who we want. Once upon a time, I projected him inside of the top five on my board, and I had to drop him. I would still have him in like a late lottery range, but Tariq Whitehead would be one of my callouts from Duke, who had a standout performance against Boston College: 18 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. But it was the shooting. It was 6 of 12 from the field overall, 4 of 8 from 3-point range. Maxwell, he looks so much better shooting from deep in that game. And his form has been a little wonky at the start of the year, which is to be expected, right? Like his lower body was probably always going to be a little wonky coming back from a lower body injury. He looks much more on balance now. He looks much more comfortable getting to those quick pull-up shots. I'm starting to think about, do I need to have him back inside my top 10 now? Is he just a late lottery guy? And Corey and I had an interesting conversation. We were at the Rutgers game today. We were watching Rutgers and Iowa and Chris Murray and that whole bag, which I will talk about Chris Murray, by the way, in another podcast this week. I'm trying not to blow my whole load on one podcast. You know what I mean? I'm trying to save some of it. But we had a conversation about Tariq, and he was asking me about where I had him on my board because I brought him up. I'm like, he looked pretty good yesterday. I really liked what I was seeing from a shooting perspective. And we were talking about what type of player he could possibly be at the next level and how do you value a player like Tariq, or if he's not shooting at a high level, he's not scoring at a high level, what else is he doing for you on an NBA floor? Do you trust him to take him with that high of a pick? And it, to me, I think the shooting is it's starting to come back by the numbers, right? This isn't just the first game he's had where he's starting to shoot better, but I think
he's
overall...
He's up to 36.4% from three now.
It's coming back for him. And it's not just the 3-point game. It's some of the pull up 2 game. We're starting to see him get much more comfortable on drives. Yes, he's much more of a straight line driver, but Corey looked at me and he's like, so if you're ranking Tariq Whitehead inside your top 10, you must think there's some sort of outcome to where he could be like a Benedict Mathurin type of player in the NBA. And I actually answered that question. Yes. Like, the main difference between him and Mathurin is, obviously, Whitehead isn't the athlete that Mathurin is, but the big difference within that athleticism is Mathurin can contort his body and finish at different angles around the basket that Whitehead can't do.
Yeah, he's just more wiggly and less powerful.
Yes, Whitehead's power, I'm gonna drive to the basket, I'm gonna get up 1 foot or two, and I'm gonna dunk over you and through you. That's what I want to do when I get to the basket, but in terms of the perimeter creation stuff, the pull-up game, the three-point shooting, I think that Whitehead can get to all the same shots outside of the paint that Mathurin can get to, and I think eventually he's going to be that effective of a spot-up, off-ball type of wing, and then I know what he can do in the cutting game, the straight-line drive game. I feel comfortable about Whitehead as that type of offensive player. To me, the bigger question mark, and I don't know how you feel about this with Whitehead, to me, the defense has to get cleaned up some. Good Lord. So we gave AJ Griffin some crap last year on the defensive end for what he showed at Duke. At least AJ Griffin, I feel like AJ Griffin did know more of what was going on that end than Whitehead. Whitehead looks like at times he really just doesn't know what's going on. And now because he's starting to come back from injury, he can't move. Like he needs to be able to, like, he will get so lost on a screen. I'll be like, dude, like how did we get here? Just like you said about Cam Whitmore. How did we get here?
Yeah. I hated the AJ Griffin defensive film so much. Like, I feel like I'm probably a little bit higher on Tariq just because I despised that AJ Griffin.
So you and I are flip flop there, but that's fine. But either way, but
I get what you're saying. Like, I don't think it's an unfair criticism. My question, maybe this is a little spicy if we're talking Tariq top 10. How would you say he compares to Max Lewis? Because Max Lewis, we're talking a lot of the same stuff. We're talking three-level scoring. With Lewis, again, it's probably closer to the Mathurin end as far as being a little bit more shifty versus a power finisher. Some defensive concerns there too. I don't think they were as blatant as the ESPN article made him out to be, where they were he's a traffic cone, basically. they killed him in that big board update. So maybe a little more creative juice as a passer.
Corey asked me the same thing. So where do you have Maxwell Lewis on your board?
Yeah.
And I'm so I would have, I had Derek 14, then I had Max 15, and then I had Bryce Sensabaugh at 16. And he's like, so you would even take him over Bryce Sensabaugh? Because he knows how much I like Bryce Sensabaugh. Mm-hmm. I said, I think right now I still would. And Corey just kind of gave me a look like, all right, you might be changing your tune on that one in a month. But yeah, the Max Lewis stuff, and this podcast is just going to be longer than you and I originally planned.
I know. So I'm sorry.
The Max Lewis stuff is interesting because I tweeted out something before we started this podcast. I finally got time to sit down and watch the Gonzaga game, and it was the game before that, the Santa Clara game. I think, yeah, it was Santa Clara, and then it was Gonzaga, and then Pepperdine played a game yesterday. He had 30 points. It's not up on Instead yet for me to watch that one fully, so I couldn't get that one. But his two most recent games outside of yesterday, finally had time to sit down and watch him. Max looks like he still doesn't fully understand what he's capable of on a basketball court.
He's still dominating.
Yep. Putting up 20 plus points per game. We said this preseason when I was talking about Max. What did I say about a preseason? I've seen him hit every single type of shot in the book. He can get to the pull-up jump shot. He can hit the spot-up threes. He can get on a line drive and finish around the basket. He can hit off cuts. He's got this really funky post-up fadeaway game that, that he likes to go to for some fadeaway, fall-away jump shots. He has everything in the book that I want him to have as a scoring wing. He just still feels like he's figuring out how to approach some of those shots. What angles am I supposed to take in getting to some of these shots? When am I supposed to go to some of these? It's just really fascinating to watch him as a shot creator. And then as a guy who's trying to pass out of some of those shots and set up other guys, especially when he's out in the break, trying to make the right passes in transition. And then some of the defensive stuff, he doesn't look like he fully knows what he's doing yet, but that's so fascinating to me because when he does get into his pull-up shot, he looks comfortable doing it though, man. He doesn't look out of place. So it's this really weird balance. And some of you might be listening to this podcast and you're like, Nate, you just contradicted yourself. You said he looks like he doesn't know what he's doing, but yet he looks comfortable in doing what he's doing. I know, I don't know how to process it.
It's bizarre. That was my whole thing last year. Was this is the smoothest guy with the ball that's this size in college hoops, and also he is traveling every 3 seconds. It's well, how can he be smooth with the ball and trap? And it's
he's got to watch some of those freaking elbows, man. Keep those elbows down, Max. Calm down, bud.
Yeah, those are killing his turnover rate.
Yes.
And if you're age and this and that, read my column about him, understand the developmental context that took place here. Lot of this was out of his hand. He is very, very young in terms of basketball years and experience in high level competition and had zero prep time. Literally went from having not played 5-on-5 basketball basically at all for a few years to then you're playing basketball 8 games into the season. You've been airdropped onto the Pepperdine roster. He is very, very young in terms of basketball years. So miss me with the age criticism of Max Lewis.
Yeah. This race between all these wings, right. In this lottery type range, like Jet Howard, like Derek Whitehead, Max Lewis, Bryce Sensabaugh. It's going to be really fascinating.
It's so fun. I love
it. They're all balling out at the same time. And then, oh, by the way, another guard/wing that we could throw into the mix. My last performance I wanted to highlight.
Do it.
Maxwell, your boy Jalen Hood-Schifino is balling the frick out.
Love it.
Last 4 games. So since Indiana's game against Kentucky, where he only shot 18% from the field, 17 points against Elon. I think Kennesaw was 18 points. Iowa, 21 points. Now today against Northwestern, 33 points on 70% from the field, 71% from the three-point range. It's not just the fact that he's putting up points and he's being more efficient, and now he's Seems like outside of the Iowa game, he's getting more pick and roll opportunities too. Again, it's not just the numbers being put up, Maxwell, but I want you to comment on this too. It's how he's getting the points that he is. This pull-up shooter that I thought he could be, dream freaking realized, because that's who he's been, particularly in these last four games. I've loved every single second of it. Mm-hmm. Jalen Hood-Schifino making the comeback, saying, screw you, Nate, for dropping me down to like 31 on your big boy.
Yeah, he was 31 on mine too. Yeah.
You got to move me back up, brother. So yeah, talk to me about what you've seen from Jalen on the tape.
I have been so happy. Like, it just makes it brings me so much joy that, like,
it's like, yeah, our, like, prodigal son has come back home.
Yes. Yeah. Like, you watch the high school tape, and it's just like, oh my gosh, like, this man, the 3-point percentages, they say he can't shoot. Like, the free throw percentage says he can't shoot. But you watch this man in the mid range, and you know this man can shoot. You know it's in there. Like, you really believe, like, I really believed, I was like, at some point, like, this guy's going to be an okay shooter. And now it's like, oh, he is taking 3.5 threes per game, and he's at 43.2% of them. Like, I'm so excited. Between that, like, the playmaking stuff, the heads up stuff, the way he's looking off these passes, he's so deceptive with it. Like, everything about Jalen Hood-Schifino that I've wanted to see is there. I think the one concern still, and I hate to, like, bring us all down back to earth a little bit, zero dunks on the year still for Jalen Hood-Schifino and zero blocks. He still looks very average athletically out there. And that's, like, a thing I feel like I missed, like, before the season. Like, I didn't think he was, like, a great athlete or anything. But he does look a little more normal.
So the back stuff isn't great. I never want to see my 6'6 lead guard having back issues like he kind of has been. So that's not great. But everything else, though.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else. He's looked absolutely fantastic, and I want to continue to watch his development over the course of the year. Now that we all see, well, I should say you and I seem to be back on Jalen Hood-Schifino. Mm-hmm. Apparently, like, Corey Rucker, like, some of the guys just, like, never left. And I'm like, all right, like Rucker texted us. He's like, I might take Jalen Hood-Schifino over Bryce Sensabaugh. And I'm like, that's interesting. And then Corey said the same thing. I'm like, that's also interesting. So I don't know if I'm fully back to where I would have been, like, bordering lottery preseason, but
yeah, he was lotto for me preseason.
He's put himself back in the first round conversation. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If this is the type of pull-up scorer that he is, the type of connector piece, secondary pick and roll guy, like, and he can play defense how he can at 6'6 with his length. Like, this is the type of starting caliber piece that NBA teams want to invest in big time. So he has to be in full consideration. The last player, Maxwell, that you wanted to give a quick shout out to, because you don't really know what to make of him. I'm not sure of people know what to make of him. Mm-hmm. Jalen Pickett. We want to talk about some of these performances for Penn State today. I mean, what did he drop today? I was trying to look up his box score right now. He had, why can't I pull it up? ESPN's not working. I think it was like 26, 9, and 8 or something along those lines. And this dude's like almost averaging a triple-double on the year. 17 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. Mm-hmm. Really, really funky player, funky scorer.
Funky is
excellent in the pick and roll, though. Scoring out of the pick and roll, 96 percentile. You love to see that. What have you noticed about Jalen Pickett as you've dug into some more tape on some sleepers this week?
He is just bizarre. Like, he is such a strange player that you watch him, and it's one of those things where it's like, at a certain point, like, you've got to make a production bet. And, like, whether that's, like, in the draft, like, probably more likely is like a two-way or an undrafted signee, given that he is a graduate player. Like, it's weird. So if you're unfamiliar, Jalen Pickett, 6'4 graduate player at Penn State. 17.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, basically 7.5 assists. Averages 1.3 steals and 0.6 blocks. One of the most just, like, in-tune defenders that you could watch. Like, you watch him guard on the ball, like, really good at that. But you watch him just anytime you swing defense off the ball. Like, he is exactly where you would want him to be standing at any given time. Like, if you just watch him when he's weak side or anything like that, like, you're never like, I wish he was, like, 1 inch further to the left or 1 inch further to the right. Like, he knows exactly where to be. Really well timed with, like, help digs and things like that. Just really magnificent on that side of the floor. Offensively, the game is odd because ultimately, like, the list of guards in the NBA that can't shoot is really small. And Jalen Pickett is only taking 3.5 threes per game, and he's making 30.6% of them.
That's a problem.
Yeah, so his career number is 34.6, but that was boosted at Siena early in his career. And in two seasons at Penn State, he is quite a bit below that. So he's around 30% this year, was 32% last year. A lot of his scoring is just like bizarre. It is the Colin Gillespie, I'm going to post up a guard. It's I'm going to penetrate out of a pick and roll. And like, I'm going to act like I'm about to do the Steve Nash and dribble around like around the basket. Oh, actually, just kidding. I now have you in the post again. Like, it's a lot of just like, wait a minute. How did he get this guy in the post? Why is this happening? And then he just scores on guys. Like he
just makes it happen. Exactly. Yeah,
it is the most just like, well, he gets it done, like type of game of anybody in college basketball. And yeah, like if you just like look at the numbers, it's like, yep, that's an NBA guy. And then you think about it, it's like he's 6'4", he can't shoot. Like it's odd. It is a puzzling, thrilling watch anytime Jalen Pickett's on a basketball court.
I'm telling you, he's gonna have some sort of opportunity in the NBA, and he's I think there's a real chance that he sticks somewhere. Not that like he's gonna be like a major rotation piece, but yeah. Like I think he can, because A, as you highlighted, he just makes shit happen. Mm-hmm. B, he knows what he's doing out there. He can run a professional offense, as we talked about. He is one of the better pick and roll guards that we have in college this year.
But like, what NBA teams run pick and roll offense through a guard that can't shoot, other than like the Lakers and Hornets? Like the Lakers run it with Ross at times, like when he's in, and then like Dennis Smith is like not a great shooter, but like gets to run some stuff for the Hornets. Like, right. Who are the other guards?
Talking about like an end of bench guy, but like,
like elite athletes, like the guys that our guards that can't shoot tend to be like really high level athletes. And like Jalen Pickett isn't that.
He's funky.
So like that's, yeah. And like that thing is just like, what is he without the ball in his hands? But like at a certain point, like you have to look at these numbers and be like, well, somebody's got to give him a chance. Like
somebody's got to really give him bizarre. A chance. Mm-hmm. I don't know. All I'm saying is it's not impossible for him to stick around. Is he more overseas guy? Impossible. Like probably. Is it impossible though for him to be like a G League guy? Like, actually, I think that's probably, if I had to bet, like where he ends up within like 2-3 years, it's probably he's sticking around the G League versus overseas. But he's just a fun name to really keep an eye on because of the type of production he's put up at Penn State this year. You mentioned he's had an interesting career going from Siena to Penn State. So he's certainly traveled. He's taken his lumps, but he's making it all work for a team that's winning more games, I think, than you and I would have probably picked Penn State to win before the season. Like, they're already at 11 wins or 11-5. And between him and Lundy and Funk and some of these interesting prospects that they have, there's a few guys down the bench like Mahaffey, who I think
he's interesting. That dude defends. Najee too, their center, is like really interesting and like can kind of shoot a little bit. He's got the Yannick Noza like over twitchiness thing, like he plays like he just like chugged 8 cups of coffee before getting on the court. But they're getting Kerry Booth next year too, if I'm not mistaken.
Like, yeah, this
Penn State's building something.
They're trying. I definitely have to make a trip out to Happy Valley. Yeah, interesting. Come for the Nick Smith and the Noah Clowney talk. Stay for the Penn State team breakdown. Mm-hmm. But that's going to do it for this episode of Draft Deeper. Certainly, thank you all so much for listening to this episode of the podcast and for supporting the No Ceilings platform in general. If you are not subscribed to this podcast, I don't know what you're doing at this point. We're giving you draft content on a podcast feed Monday through Friday. No Ceilings NBA. If you're not subscribed to the Substack, NoCeilingsNBA.com, we're giving you written draft content, full-length draft content, Monday through Friday. Come check us out. Come join us. Come party. We love to have fun talking about the draft, talking about prospects. I even do some NBA rookie coverage from time to time. I have a rookie rank coming out at some point. I think I'm going to mix it up a little bit with the type of content in that rookie rank, but that's going to be coming out in the next few weeks. Maxwell and I, we're pumping out columns every single Monday and Tuesday, respectively. You're finding Draft Deeper on this feed every Monday. We are consistent. We're credible. We like to have fun. We're here. And I just really appreciate all the support that we keep getting on this platform. So thank you so much. But along with subscribing, please make sure rate the show, like the show, give us some reviews, give us some feedback, talk to us. We're pleasant people. We love hearing from our fans, from our audience. If you have any takes you want to throw at us, just hit us up on social media. You can find me on Twitter @DraftDeeper. You can find Maxwell on Twitter @BoundBoards. hit us up, talk to us. We're always tweeting. We're always doing fun stuff on social media, talking about the film we're watching, posting clips, the whole nine yards. So come hang out with us. Thank you again for showing the support you do for No Ceiling. Subscribe everywhere you can. And until we meet again on this podcast feed, I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your week. Thank you so much.